This episode of the Last Drinks podcast is sponsored by Zecca Skin. Zecca Skin specializes in high-quality men's skincare products that not only benefit the health of your skin, but also support men's mental health. Use discount code LASTDRINKS25 at checkout to get 25% off all Zecca Skin products. And if you wish to support the show, you can now donate via Buy Me A Coffee. That's www.buymeacoffee.com/lastdrinks. All donations will go to keeping the show running and thriving. We greatly appreciate all the support we've received from our fans and followers. Now sit back and relax, and we hope you enjoy this episode of the Last Drinks podcast.
Just getting stuck into it.
That's it, brother. A drink would go good.
Well, I got water here, so I guess that'll do. Clear the throat. Well, welcome to another episode of the Last Drinks podcast, and I'm Will Hitchens, and joining me today is Daniel Holmes. Hello, Daniel.
Hey, man. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Your background is in personal training?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, primarily.
Primarily. And have you done bodybuilding as well? Or?
Yeah, I've done about 6 competitions throughout the years.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess you're probably most known for appearing on, I guess it's one of the most popular reality TV shows in Australia, Married at First Sight.
Yeah.
And you appeared on, was it last year's one?
Yeah, last season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you also boxed another cast member, didn't you?
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
Yeah.
And you won.
Yeah.
Nice one. full disclosure, like I've never watched it. I've seen clips from this year's one, I think, on social media. So I think that'd be good because I'd like to get to know you from the source instead of perhaps in some of my research and learning a bit more about you for this chat. You know, it's good that I can just come to the source and learn more about you as opposed to reading some fucking Daily Mail article or something. So pleasure for you to be here. But you reached out and you wanted to share a bit of your journey. So I'll give you the floor now. What was it that you wanted to share with our listeners today?
I don't know. I guess your podcast kind of resonated with me a bit. I know it's a lot about alcohol and breaking alcohol addiction, but, you know, I've had addictions in the past as well. It wasn't necessarily alcohol, steroids. I said, I've competed probably 6 times.
Mm.
And, you know, I'd been on steroids for like 7 years straight.
Yeah.
And all addictions are very similar, I guess.
Mm.
And, you know, it's I think it's a good platform here to talk about that kind of stuff, talk about steroid addiction, because no one really does. It's a very hush-hush kind of thing, and people that are in the industry that have some sort of social influence, they're not talking about it because they're on it. You know
what I've seen, I mean, I guess the most prevalent one recently was, I guess, Liver King in America. You know, I mean, he was taking quite a cocktail of things monthly, but because it is, yeah, very hush-hush thing, and that's why I thought, well, we haven't dived into that much at all on here. And like you said, as much as there's lots of different addictions, a lot of the characteristics and patterns that play out are very similar. I guess we can go back to, you know, obviously you're very into the health and fitness. So when did the love of the gym and lifting weights begin for you?
Probably like most guys, maybe it's not, but for me personally, I had a girlfriend, she cheated on me way back, and I was like, damn it, like how am I going to make her jealous? Like I need an upgrade, I need to make her jealous, and I started lifting weights, and then after like 2 weeks, I pretty much forgot about her, and I was fully hooked.
Yeah.
But the thing that happened to me, and it's what happens to most young guys, is you hit a point where you're realizing people are starting to progress. People are starting to, like, I don't know, they're getting supernatural powers. And then you realize, oh, steroids is a thing.
Yeah.
There's an enhancement to all this shit. And I guess my personality type a little bit, I was like, I got proposed with it and took up on that proposal.
Yeah.
And the addiction started, I guess.
Mm.
Because once you start taking steroids, most people will do a cycle. They'll come off and go, oh, no, this sucks. I don't like to be natural. Like, and then they just jump straight back on. And they never want to feel that feeling of coming off again. So they'll just stay on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super common.
Yeah. Which, you know, sounds very common to people who've, you know, gone on drugs, come off it and go, oh, I don't like this feel. It's like a withdrawal thing. And then, it's just, well, I don't want to feel that. So they get back on it.
Yeah.
And seems, I mean, it's very prevalent. I mean, I think some people think that with taking steroids, you just take it and then you just blow up into a gorilla. Like, you still have to do all the other, you know, requirements of building a physique with regular regimented gym work, like exercise and correct diet and recovering properly.
Yeah.
And so was it just your peers around you were all doing it, they're seeing results and you're like, oh, I want that. So what are you guys doing? And that was just from there.
Yeah, for sure. And I had a bit of a deluded perspective of everything at the time where I thought the bigger, the better. The bigger I am, the better I am. The bigger I am, the more girls will like me. The bigger I am, just the more confidence I'll have. And yeah, some confidence comes with that and there's some benefits. But, you know, like any addiction, like a heroin addiction, like you feel better on it, so you never want to come off. But there comes a time when you have to come off. And like for me personally, like I said, I stayed on for 7 years straight. And what a lot of us steroid addicts do, you'll stay on, you'll do a cycle, then you'll lower the dose and then boost it up again. So you never really come off, you just lower the dose.
Yeah.
And the only reason I came off was because I went on Married at First Sight. And I was like, well, I can't get drugs here.
Yeah.
And I was kind of forced to come off. And I went through hell for like close to a year. Like my body decaying essentially. My hormones were completely out of whack. Just all the side effects that you would have coming off any drug. All the withdrawal symptoms. And I'm like, I've gone this far. There's no way I'm getting back on it now.
Yeah.
And now that I'm off, I kind of see things with a new perspective. I'm like, hang on. Everyone's going to have to go through this at one at one point, because all the high level influencers in the fitness industry, they're all on steroids. At some point, they all have to come off and they're going to suffer the same withdrawal symptoms that I did, like anyone did, like a heroin addict did, a nicotine addict, alcoholic. Everyone's going to suffer the same withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah.
It's insane. But no one's speaking about it. It's all hush hush, like, yeah, it's all good. It's just steroids. It's like the most accepted illegal drug use in the world.
Because I guess, yeah, like it is this, I mean, as you said, it's like a hush hush thing and it's just, well, we'll just put it to the side. We don't need to focus on it. And then it's just this elephant in the room that just keeps growing and growing because it's just been plied with more steroids. But so I guess, you just described a lot of the side effects of, I guess, coming off it, but what did you experience when taking it? And I mean, like, this is the first time you're just like, is it just like, oh, we're on now?
Bro, it's insane. You literally become Superman. Like instantaneously, like within 2 weeks, you will literally wake up one day, look in the mirror and be like, holy shit, my traps are bigger. My muscles are actually bigger. I've got more veins. I'm leaner. Like you see it, and it's something that you don't want to go away.
Yeah.
Especially if you become an addict, if you have addictive personality and you base a lot of the way you feel on the way you look, which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
It's extremely addictive in that sense. Yeah. You'll see changes daily. So.
Yeah. And I guess like, to point out that a lot of is focused on how you look, and particularly, I mean, living here on the Gold Coast, like it's a very image focused city in some regard. And yeah, like if you start taking it, you start seeing really good results, then you start sharing that online and then people are going like, fuck, you're looking big, fuck, you're looking great. Like then that just reinforces, oh, well, you know, maybe, you know, if you get to this perceived notion that, oh, I didn't look good before, then I'm going to have to keep taking this. And that just reinforces the cycle to do it.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And because I was working in the fitness industry as well, and I grew a following, I got like 40K Instagram followers just based on my physique, posting fitness up content.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I come off steroids, that's my social presence is this fit, shredded, jacked dude. I'm going to have to completely change my identity in order to come off.
Yeah.
And like that was a whole concept that I had to wrap my head around as well.
Because I did actually, in looking you up, like I found some pictures of you, I guess what it must be when you're on steroids, and you don't just look like a unit, you look like a block of flats. Like you fucking look massive.
I was jacked. I didn't think I was jacked though.
Yeah. So was there like a bit of body dysmorphia as well?
Massive. Yeah. I literally at the time didn't think I was jacked. And now I look back, I was like, I looked stupid jacked, like extreme. And in my head, again, goes back to like, as a guy, the reality is a lot of the shit we do is to like try to attract a woman in a sense. There's always that like deep underlying thing where like everything we do, that's why we try to become rich or we try to whatever it might be. It's always to try and attract a good mate. And I genuinely thought the bigger I get, the better the quality chick I'm going to get.
Yeah.
Or the hotter the girl, you know what I mean? But it's not even like that. You get to a certain level and it just looks extreme.
Yeah. You start learning, like women, like a lot of them don't really particularly like the big fucking bodybuilder type. Some do. But a lot of them don't.
They do until they get in a relationship with them and realize they spend all their money on steroids and they're fucking injecting with needles every second day or every day even.
Yeah. And I guess even with doing that, and then I guess the side effects that come with excessive steroid use as well, and the impact it would have on the relationship.
Yeah.
So did you experience many side effects with that?
Yeah, because you're essentially regulating your emotions via injections.
Because
if I'd miss injections, my hormones start to go out of whack and I need to regulate them again with an external substance.
Mm.
Like you're completely your own doctor.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of drugs. So like, you know, there's stuff to control your estrogen levels and your test levels. And if your dick doesn't work, you need to start taking this.
So it's just more stuff piles up to take.
And then because you have this body dysmorphia where you need to get bigger, then it's there's insulin and there's peptides and growth hormone. There's so much. You can fall down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
It's insane, but no one's talking about it. It's all good. It's all good.
Well, like I said, it's the elephant in the room.
It is. And no one, and again, no one's talking about it because those that have influence in the fitness industry are on it.
Yeah. Well, I kind of think with some of them, I mean, I've seen some that have been transparent about it. There's a bloke I like out of South Africa. He's is it Noel Daisel? He's a massive fucking South African bodybuilder, but he's transparent. Just like, I've taken PEDs. You know, if you think you're going to look like me by just training, you know, diet, supplements, you're probably not going to.
Yeah.
He's very transparent about that, which I think is really admirable.
Yep.
And then when you get guys, I guess, like Liver King, who just denied it for ages. And you're kind of looking at him just like, mate, you're in your late 40s and you look jacked as shit. Just like, I don't know if the body can naturally look like that. Because I think with a lot of them, like there is incentive with, I guess, the products they sell and their programs. And it can be an insidious thing, because I remember chatting with someone about like looking for a PT, I guess, if you wanted to improve your health and fitness, like, just because I got a good physique doesn't necessarily mean they're knowledgeable on lots of different, you know, aspects of the human body, and I guess, and like peak physical performance and stuff.
Yeah.
You could just, they've just figured out how to look good.
Yeah. No, it's not that at all. Like one of the best coaches in the world, Hani Rambod, who coaches like the Mr. Olympias, he doesn't train. He looks like shit.
It
doesn't necessarily translate like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. A lot of the people that are on it, they have a product or service to sell based on their image.
Yeah.
Hence why they're not talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I commend you for coming on here and being open about it, because, it's a courageous thing to do, especially if it's in an industry where not a lot of people are talking about it. And so was it just appearing on Married at First Sight where I guess the decision that you couldn't take anymore because I guess you wouldn't have been able to because you had to go film that? Was that when it was like, all right, well, and then you filmed it whilst coming off steroids? Is that what happened?
Yes. It was insane. Like leading up, I had all intentions of trying to come off, but that meant changing my entire identity.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out how, and then Married at First Sight came up and it was kind of a perfect opportunity. So yeah, coming off whilst filming was a bit of a roller coaster mentally. Like my hormones were all over the shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah, and especially when you, I guess, are put on in the public light to be, all right, here's a stranger you're going to marry and then try and build a relationship with whilst in the meantime you're holding this, I guess, this little secret in the back trying to keep yourself together.
Yeah.
You did try to come off beforehand and it was just, like you just... very attached, I guess, to the identity that you had.
Exactly, man. And it's the same thing that everyone does when they try and come off. You come off, your body starts to diminish and you're like, I just can't. I need to get back on.
Yeah.
I just can't. Because you could come off and be training harder than you were when you were on and your body will continue to diminish.
Mm.
It's just the way it is. It takes about 6 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wild.
It's just like, think about, I don't know, how... You don't drink at all now?
Yeah, so it's been 3 years.
And were you drinking constantly, like almost every day?
Yeah, it became like a daily thing.
Did you have withdrawals?
I was fortunate enough. The last time, like, I kind of recognized some withdrawal patterns, but, like, it wasn't as severe as some of the stuff I've learned where, like, there's two drugs in the world where coming off them can be fatal. I think one of them is benzodiazepine, which is like Xanax, and the other one's alcohol. Because when I went, because I originally went to rehab, and they were, you know, having to monitor me for 72 hours when I went in, and I was just kind of like, "Why are you doing that? I'm fine." This is, and then like my mum's a GP, and she's like, "No, coming off alcohol after heavy use for an extended period of time abruptly can be fatal, because you can go into seizures, you can die." Like that was, and I was like, "Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah."
So I guess there'll be similar things, I guess, with coming off steroids like that, especially with all your hormones and stuff, and then in the position that you're in with this television show where you're, I guess, trying to build a relationship with someone else, that would have been challenging.
Yeah, massively. And I did meet like a girl on the show, and I ended up moving in with her, moving states, and she helped me kind of stay off, because trust me, the thought of going back on constantly creeped into my mind. Yeah. Like it was always there. But once you get past a certain point, it's like, no, there's no going back now.
Yeah, like it's that discomfort, that period of discomfort with steroids, with drugs, with alcohol, where it's just the storm that you just have to go through. And once you get out the other side, and especially if you got to a place like, okay, I'm pretty good now, like, you know, you had that experience of coming off it, just like, fuck, if I went back on it, you'd have to go through that again. And I guess that sounds like that put you off it entirely.
100%. It's just, but I think I was a lucky one. Like some people would get sucked back in.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the reality is, the older you get, the less your body is able to adapt to certain things.
Yeah.
Maybe if I came off in my early 20s, like it might have recovered quicker, but most people are going to come off in like their late 30s. By that point, your body's different, man.
Yeah.
And they've been off for 10 years. It's going to hurt.
Mm.
It's going to hurt.
Because, I've heard stuff about, like, especially for older men doing, like, testosterone replacement therapy.
Yeah.
Because I guess our testosterone diminishes as we get older, and then there's stuff around that I've seen things where, I guess, like, men 50 years ago at 60 have the same testosterone levels as guys at 30 these days. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that could be in a whole range of different things.
Yeah.
But what I understand with that is that once you go on it, you can't come off it, because now that's your natural stream of testosterone.
Mm.
And that's certainly a prevalent like desire, especially for a lot of men. It's just like, well, I got to get my testosterone levels up because that makes me a man. Can't have any estrogen. Fuck that. Like, So I guess, you know, coming off it for a year, and how have you managed to shift your mindset about, I guess, because it was very image focused. So, how are you comfortable with how you look now?
Not really, to be completely honest. Like that body dysmorphia, I guess, to a degree, is still there. Mm. It's just a hard thing. Maybe that's me personally. I've been training for 10 years. I've been on steroids for 7. Always lean, jack, shredded, you know, and I'm not that now.
Mm.
Like I'm not held on it, but I'm definitely not chill about it either.
You probably got it there as like, oh, this is like peak physique for me, and then I think you look pretty fine now. It's like I could show you a picture of me later, like when I was full drinking, I was full fat fuck, like 120 really? kilos. Like I look completely different now from what people have told me, but it can be a tough thing. I guess it's just something you can work through. It's about, I guess, getting comfortable in your own skin and looking at yourself in the mirror and not being like, oh fuck, I'm not as big as I used to be, and but that's okay. It's okay.
It's exactly what it is. It's just a time thing, I guess.
And I guess you've been off it for a year, so and like you said, like the 6 to 12 month period seems to be common for like quite a transitional period to just come completely on it off it
for sure.
And how's your training? Is your training different these days, or is it?
It's just not as frequent.
Mm.
And because like throughout that period, I did a boxing match, like we said before. Yeah. I stopped training weights completely. It was just boxing training every day.
Mm. Yeah, I imagine that sort of training is very different to lifting weights in the gym.
Completely it's different.
Very cardio-based. Yeah,
very cardio-based. And I've always, like, that's why I competed in bodybuilding in the past. I had a competitive mindset.
Mm.
So I was, like, all in on boxing every single day, training for that.
Mm.
And, there's no weights. There's nothing that improves your physique necessarily, like, from a visual standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was your takeaways from the boxing match?
Oh, everything, bro. That was amazing. It was, I spoke about it yesterday, actually. And it's, I make some pretty dramatic statements, but I feel like almost every guy or every man should go through some sort of combat sport or do one event like that where you're like tested in that way, because there's like a certain feeling when you're locked in that cage or the ring. You know this guy on the other end of the ring has intent to cause maximal damage on me as I do him. And it's just like a fight or flight kind of thing. It's a very interesting feeling, but yeah, definitely worth it. I learned a lot about myself and about, just a lot of things.
Yeah. So is that something you're going to keep pursuing in the future or?
Probably not, to be honest. Like it's pretty savage, man. Like,
yeah.
And there's, it's a lot of pressure. And yeah, like I said, you have the potential of getting really hurt, which is serious. I don't really want to get punched in the head that much. I'm 32. Like, and again, it was like an influencer boxing match. So he was a guy from the television show that I was on. And, you know, I'm not going to climb the ranks as like an amateur or anything like that. But yeah, it's very interesting because like leading up to the fight, I was like the villain. I'm like the bad guy. Publicly, I was the one. Like polls would go up and be like, 97% Brent to win, 3% Daniel. Like I was the one that was meant to lose.
Yeah, and they become the underdog and hope to win it.
I love it.
It is a bit of a spectacle as well. Like more than just two blokes getting in the ring and fighting, and then there's this whole show around it. Especially, I mean, when you see some prominent fighters who have that personality. I mean, I think of like Muhammad Ali. Like Conor McGregor and. Where there's like a showmanship to it and they just taunt one another and you know, proclaim how great they are. And I mean to be fair, they are some very impressive fighters, so not discredit to them. Don't come and fight me, you'll probably beat the crap out of me, so
But yeah, I tried to jump on that a little bit as well, because again, I'm not a boxer. I was just an influencer that had a boxing match with another influencer. So I was like, let's get people entertained. Let me prod this guy. Let me get people to hate me even more, because love or hate, you're still paying tickets to see me lose. And you know, it, at the end of the day, it all works in your own favor.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like the crux of us is around alcohol, I guess, with my experience and my co-host Mitch's experience. So do you have much of a relationship with alcohol yourself, or?
Yeah, like I guess I go against the mantra a little bit. Like I drink socially. I've never personally had any bad experiences with alcohol. But yeah, like we spoke about earlier, like I'm of the complete understanding of how serious an alcohol addiction is. Like my father was probably the worst alcoholic I've ever seen, still to this day.
Yeah.
Like to the extent that he would crack a drink in the morning, drink all day, and then fall asleep on the couch having the last drink. And that was every day, 7 days a week. And the interesting thing about that is, as well, as he would drink and as the day would go on, he would increasingly become a monster, essentially. Like his personality would change completely.
Yeah.
And it's because, like, you know, most of our shit in life comes back to our childhood. Like he had a tormented childhood, and that would just creep up, I guess, when he was under the influence.
So I guess that would have had an effect on how you approach alcohol yourself.
Yeah, to an extent, I just made me understand the dangers of it, I guess. Like, yeah, he tore apart our family. He ruined his own life, everyone. So I definitely understand the seriousness of it. But for some reason, I've been able to control it myself.
Yeah. You
know, I've never had a bad experience with alcohol. But I definitely understand the seriousness of it.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, quite a difficult thing, because we've spoken to people who've shared about usually, like a family member or someone who has an addiction like that. And yeah, like the effect, it's kind of driving back to the point that where like people in active addiction may not think that what they're doing is affecting those around them, but it certainly is. And especially for a parent in that mindset, like it can have a devastating effect on their kids. And yeah, so I guess that must have been pretty tough for you.
Yeah, like I said, man, it literally like tore apart our family completely. Like he was a full-blown alcoholic and out of control. It's could change a human's personality completely. And I don't know, what were you like when you were drunk? Because I'm fine when I'm drunk. I'm the happiest guy in the world.
I mean, someone once said to me it was kind of like a roulette wheel. It was just, you didn't really know what you were going to get, so there was all sorts of different personality. I could be happy, I could be sad, I could be pissed off, I could be I think at times, like, yeah, like I could be happy and then something would trigger you, and because you're just quick to respond, then that would just set you off. And because I just had no boundaries with it, where like you were saying, like I can, if you've got a handle on it, like for me it was always just, if we're drinking, we're drinking as much as we possibly can. Because that was, I guess, that's just what you did in my eyes. And it was a rough period, but to be where I am now is certainly a lot better and a lot more productive. And, you know, then starting this podcast and putting the message out there that others can do the same. They don't necessarily have to be as much of a pisshead as I was. But I guess it's just, yeah, like starting a conversation, because I've had to explore it like with so many people where it's just so nonchalant. People are just, oh, we're going to someone's birthday or we're drinking. And it's just like, well, do you have to? You know, like we're going to go to this, it's a wedding. We're going to, so many people who go to weddings and like, oh, I've got this wedding on, so I'm going to have to drink. I won't be up. So it's like, well, you don't have to. It's a really funny thing how, like it is, I've described it as this handrail that we have in our social interactions. And a lot of it's just a mask, a lot of maybe just feelings and emotions that come up with like, you know, anxiety and shit like that, that it just numbs it out for a period.
Yeah, most definitely. Like I made the joke before we started this, like a drink would go good now, like to numb the anxiety. But like, yeah, you're right. It is a bit of a handrail.
Yeah. It's glad, I guess, yeah, that you've come out pretty well, because I guess experiencing like having a father like that, sometimes, yeah, it can either be that you go the route where you're just like, well, I've experienced that, so I don't want anything to do with alcohol. Or like sometimes it's a bonding method for like the father and son, and they drink together, because I met people like that. And it was funny at the time, I guess. You're like, oh, you're drinking with this bloke's dad, he's one of the boys. And then as you get older, you're like, I don't know if that's quite, I don't know if that's that's not really cool, actually.
No, for sure. And like you can go even deeper and darker than that. Like for my family at least, like, you know, if you're being raised by someone who's an alcoholic, you're not essentially being raised at all, right? And my brother, who was older than me, bro, by the time he was 17, he had stabbed his best mate. He was in jail by 17. He took his own life at 21. Like, I mean, it fully destroyed our family completely. And it's because we had an old man who just, he had no emotional stability himself whatsoever. And then when he was drunk, he was out of control. And there was no like guidance. And you know, when you're young, you kind of need your parents for guidance. Until you get older, then you can kind of figure it out yourself. But yeah, it can really destroy not only your life, but the people around you.
I mean, that's some compelling stuff. I mean, sorry about your brother as well. Like, how does that, I mean, that's a pretty rough thing to go through as well, losing your brother.
Yeah, it was pretty intense, man. It's pretty intense. And you know, by the, at that age, man, our family was chaos. So it was nothing new. It was just like, of course this happened. Like there's chaos on every corner. Every night it was fights. Me and my old man would get into fights, like physical fights all the time. Like it was proper chaos, and it was literally all down to alcohol.
Yeah.
He was just a raging alcoholic.
So do you, I guess nowadays, are you quite comfortable with a structured life over chaos then?
What do you mean?
Well, like, yeah, I guess you've grown up with quite, sounds like a very chaotic life.
Yes.
Would you be more, I guess, experiencing like a more structured life?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this is more for me.
I crave a structured life, and I find it difficult to get it, especially the last 2 years where I've left to go on maths. In the last 2 years, my life has been like insane, like not in a bad way, but there hasn't been much structure, because I've flown to Sydney for maps and I've gone to New York and I've gone in a relationship and somewhere else, and it's been pretty difficult. I crave structure, but and a lot of it does come back down to, like childhood shit. Like everything comes back down to childhood shit. But yeah, for sure.
Well, I guess we can briefly talk about more or less, not necessarily what went on in maths, but I guess just your experience with it. I mean, I've heard bits and, I mean, people say whatever sort of goes on with it. I mean, is there much you can delve into what goes on? I guess you go to Sydney to film it for a certain period, and then are you just basically shut off for the world for like a couple of months or?
Pretty much, man. Yeah. Like I flew down to Sydney for it. Essentially as filming starts, you have your phone, but they take over your social medias. Like they have all the passwords and that, so you can't communicate with people and you can't get DMs and see all the hate or love. But yeah, it's a very isolated. Once you're in the maths world, you're in that bubble, and it's very hard to distinguish reality and or what's not reality.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, you and your partner. It's you, your partner, 10 producers, a personal producer that's also feeding you what you think might be reality.
Mm.
Like, you could be doing the dumbest shit and they'd be like, people are going to love you. This is awesome. Keep going.
Mm.
And it's just like, fuck, what's reality? What am I doing? Is this the right thing? It's really hard to distinguish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I guess, like, with what I've heard from some reality, I mean, it's called reality TV, but, you know, I mean, there are bits and pieces, it sounds like. It's not really like what's... Sometimes it gets kind of... you're directed in a certain way as well.
Yeah. You can't control what narrative you get. Really, like, I could have saved a puppy on camera and they would have still been able to figure out a way to make me a villain, like,
yeah, because they can edit you in a certain way.
It's so easy. They have it down to an art, bro.
Mm.
Like, yeah, so my narrative was cheater, even though it wasn't, but that was the narrative for me, so I can't be the hero of the show because I'm a cheater, right?
Mm.
And, you know, you can't have a hero without a villain, the other way around, so
yeah. You seem to have a good head on your shoulders about the whole thing. Because I guess, like, with that, you know, okay, cheating, it's not a good thing. And you're on public display on a national level. Your social media is public.
Yeah.
And if you were the hero, you'd probably you'd have people coming to you saying, good job, blah, 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 leaving all lots of love. You fuck up on a grand scale like that. You're being exposed to, I guess, the opportunity of the public then to just tell you how they feel about it, which, you know, did you have much dealings with just online, just fucking vitriol quite a bit?
Bro, I'll check my phone right now. I have 3 hate messages. It's just nonstop. But the thing is, it's kind of a blessing in disguise because actually, before I even say that, I'm not actually a cheater. Like, no one actually cheated on the show. Me and my partner I got matched with, she walked off the show. And then the girl that I cheated with, she never had anything with her partner. They didn't kiss. It's not a real relationship. Mm-hmm. It's freaking fake.
Yeah.
But yeah, in regards to the hate coming through, like, bro, it's been a blessing in disguise because, like, it's kind of made me really question my ideas and who I am and my beliefs because I've got constant hate coming at me and I have to go, oh, fuck, are they right? Like, let me really think about myself and what they're saying. And I've doubled down on what I believe in as opposed to being affected by what they're saying, because they're saying what they're saying based on a character they've seen on TV, not who I am as a person.
Mm.
And I was able to kind of like distinguish that pretty early on.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're quite confident and know who you are as a person.
Yeah.
In your soul, you know, like, I know who I am. I know I'm a good person.
Yeah.
This was just, you know, an interesting experience to take upon.
Mm.
Because, I mean, were there any main takeaways you took from the experience?
Oh, heaps, bro. I'm a different person from... I'm not a different person, but I've learned a ton about myself prior to after. Even just, like, being open to talking about feelings because you had to do that a lot on the show.
Yeah.
They're like, take me back to your childhood. Like, they're constantly, like... They're, like, constantly, like, drilling in. They want everything. They know everything about me.
Mm.
And to be able to talk about that constantly, it, like, kind of helped me... just be more open. Even like when it comes to relationships and friendships, I'm more open because to build a friendship or a relationship, you have to be somewhat open and vulnerable, I guess.
Yeah, and get open about and potentially some pretty difficult stuff. I mean, you don't have to sort of just dump all the fucking the skeletons out of the closet right away, but that's certainly how a lot of deep connected relationships can be formed, is from like I'm trusting you to share with this information with you, especially if it's, even if it's just like feelings that you're experiencing and more moving towards, I guess, more of a society, which we feel like we are, where men are sort of more open to expressing that and I guess instilling that it is okay to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. If the thing came around again, would you ever do it again?
Yeah, for sure. I would. And I would probably be a villain again, but that's all good. Because at the end of the day, if you're just being yourself, which is pretty raw, and like for me, I'll say some pretty outlandish stuff and just honest stuff, and I don't know, it can be twisted. Like there's definitely groups of these individuals. I don't know if you want to call them woke, what you want to call them, but if you've got a strong opinion, they genuinely will come at you.
Mm.
They'll come at you hard. And it's never like for a discussion, it's always hate. Like every message I've ever got of hate, it's like, you're a dickhead, you're vile, you're this. And I say, what exactly is it you don't like about me? And I'll say, because you're a dickhead. I'm like, well, that's not an answer. Like, what is it specifically? What did I specifically say or do?
Yeah, like when people will come at people, I guess, for things they've said, and then I don't like what you say. So it's like, well, can you say something you don't, or that you don't like, and they can't say anything, or I don't agree with anything you stand for. It's just like, well, give me examples, and they can't give you an answer. No. It's just a need to just project word vomit, and I guess an emotional response.
Yeah.
And especially because, like, you're on this national fucking television show that's the biggest, I guess, reality TV show in the country.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if they're portraying you as the villain, and it seems like you quite like the villain role as well yourself.
I'm not against it. Yeah. But you know why? Because if I were to be portrayed as a hero or the nice guy, which they very easily could have done, once the show is over and it's back to reality, I have to keep that image up for the hundred thousands of followers that I got. I have to keep up this persona of this nice guy, which is fine. I am a nice guy, but I have strong opinions, and that's going to get under a lot of people's skin. And there's going to be a lot of pressure on me not to speak my truth because I want to maintain a certain image.
Yeah. So it's not really that you're a villain. It's just I guess it sounds like you're just honest and content with yourself and strong in your beliefs, which would be more of an appealing person anyway than just being tiptoeing nice guy. Yes. I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to offend anybody, that sort of thing.
That's a dangerous guy. And here's the thing. Would you rather have someone, maybe you don't like them at the start, they're very honest and real, you don't like them at the start, is what it is, or somebody that pretends to be something they're not and you find out later on that they're an idiot? Going to hurt more because you're like, hang on, this guy's betrayed me this whole time.
Like, it's good to just be right up front of who you are at the start. You know, you don't have to be just a complete fuckwit about it. But sometimes, you know, it's not what you said, it's how you said it. It's just like, oh, well, come on. Like, I'm trying to express it, you know, as honestly as I can. Try and show you who I am. And sometimes the truth hurts, but do you want that, or do you want something beautiful and pretty and like entices the eyes? So another thing, actually, because I guess with sharing, even just expressing, like, I guess because you talked about coming off steroids during that and all the hormonal imbalance with that, and then was there any much effect, I guess, on your mental health
during coming off or during
during the show, because you talked about it was quite isolating, but then guess post show, or is it just because, like you say, like, I was in Sydney, then I was in New York and doing all this like preoccupied with a lot of stuff?
Yeah, bro, I was fucked. Like, after the show had aired, and I realized, because I actually finished the show and thought, oh, we're gonna get a pretty cool edit, we're gonna look pretty cool, like, we did this and we did that, and they showed none of it and portrayed us in a certain way. And then my relationship that I built on the show kind of started falling apart. I was finding it hard to find my feet in a new state. Bro, everything kind of came crashing down at once. I was in a real bad space, like, mentally, probably the worst I ever have. You know, I don't know how to, like, summarize it, but the relationship fell apart. Mm-hmm. I came back I definitely had a crashing moment, like a, I guess, rock bottom.
Yeah.
And had to kind of figure it out and get back on my feet for sure.
Relationships breaking down can be very tough. For a lot of men, it's quite of a pinnacle thing. I mean, I had an experience with like that in my early 20s. I mean, that kind of led down a spiral of a further alcohol addiction from that. So did you have, I guess, tools in place to pull you out of it?
Sort of. Like you said, you can either keep derailing or go the opposite way. I kind of went the opposite way, and that's actually why I went to New York. I went to New York for 4 months and just kind of got away and just with myself, there's no real distractions, and kind of sorted out my path and what I wanted and how I felt and who I was, because I kind of had to rebuild that. Because like I said, I actually did crash bad after the show for a period of time.
And that'd actually be good to go to America, where you wouldn't see any news about Married at First Sight. You wouldn't be walking down the street, people would probably recognize it. You could just chill out for 4 months and then get everything together. So the another thing that I was interested in that you started sharing about was did you recently get a hair transplant?
I went over to Turkey. It's still a bit patchy, but recently went over to Turkey, got a transplant. Like, that's some of the perks of coming off a show as like an influencer, I guess. You get some deals like that. They flew me out there and we did a transplant, and it was good, man. They take real good care of you.
Was it something that you're interested in, or did they come to you and say, like, Daniel, your hairline looks fucked, we'll fucking
see. No, I was interested in it. A friend of mine that went over there kind of said, look, it'd be worth hitting these guys up. I just messaged them. I said, yeah, man, we'll take care of you. Flew over there, did it. But here's the thing, there's another freaking side effect of steroids. Bro, it's because of steroids. My hair was perfect, and then I think it was my last bodybuilding competition where I just stacked a whole bunch of steroids on. Bro, my hair just diminished.
Yeah, because I've heard that's a side effect of steroid use is you lose your hair.
Yeah.
I see that quite a bit in the in some of the gyms around here.
Everyone's bald.
Because I was going to ask that. Yeah, was that one of the effects as well?
Bro, 100%. Mm. Yeah. Like I said, it was my last cycle. I just pumped a whole bunch of gear and my hair just diminished. It never came back. Mm. I was like, fuck.
Mm.
And but, you know, I encourage it. I went over to Turkey, did it. It was good, smooth, easy. And now I've got hair.
Mm.
Can't complain.
You know, I know that it can be quite a... It seems to be like a big insecurity for a lot of men losing their hair.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I have heard that Turkey seems to be now the place to go to do that. And, you know, I guess because then sharing it on your platform and being open about it, what's been the response to that?
Oh, just a lot of guys reaching out wanting the same, to be honest. But I was like, man, that was probably the biggest thing holding me back from doing it, because I'm like, damn, I'm going to have to go share this online.
Mm.
This is like a little insecurity thing. Like, I don't know want to share it online, but, you know, I did, and now I don't really care. But, yeah, that was probably the biggest thing holding me back, was the fact that I had to tell everyone. Like, I want to just get a hair transplant in quiet and no one to know about it. But, yeah, I shared it online, and so many guys have hit me up about it. Because like you said, man, it is an insecurity for a lot of guys. Like, we all want friggin' mad hair. So, yeah, heaps of guys hit me up. And
yeah, because that was actually in our chat with Trey not too long ago, because his business partner is with Crown Aesthetics, so that men's aesthetic clinic. And he talked about, like, yeah, you know, I do the dry needling, the facials. I guess he got his eyebrows done. He get regular haircuts. And then he started sharing about getting colonics, which is, I mean, I've heard people getting those.
What's this? Like a...
So that's where you get a hose, like, put up your bum.
Oh, okay.
And then flush out, I guess, the excess inside, I guess, excrement in your body.
Oh, shit.
That's kind of the procedure. So he was talking about that.
Dude, you can't just slide that in. A haircut and then a freaking hose.
Yeah, hose up your ass, yeah. It's yeah, but he when he started posting about it on his social media, it was the same thing. Guys would reach out and they're just like, I've been interested in doing some of these things, but yeah, it's just like, how will I be perceived as a man doing, I guess, quote-unquote, taking care of your skin and like, look how you look. That's what women do. We don't do that. And the way he described it was like, look, you know, it makes, you know, I like looking good.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good. And I just think, fuck it, do it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, I mean, it'd be like in the transition in things with like women lifting weights in the gym, where it's just like, oh, women don't lift weights in the gym. No, they should be in the cardio area. They should be doing yoga and Pilates and, just like, nah, get in the fucking, get in the weight room. I mean, you see some of the chicks ripping it in there. I'm just like, not bad. Well done.
Now, I'm of the same belief. Like, if something makes you feel better, do it. Who cares? As a man or not, like, whatever you want to do, do it. Yeah, I'm in the same mindset of that for sure.
Because you got quite a good set of teeth as well. You have that as well.
Yeah. So I did that a while ago though, down in the Gold Coast. My teeth were pretty jacked up just from being a little rugged kid. And why not, man? Get some fresh teeth. Why not?
Yeah. Teeth as well. Yeah. Like a lot of guys get their teeth done too. Yeah. And yeah, like we said, if it makes you feel good,
100%. We're
looking good, why not do it? And I mean, there's not really necessarily to be, I guess, transparent about it, but I guess at least then being open about it yourself and just, I guess, owning your insecurities in a sense makes them more powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, because like you being open about it, you then got guys coming out to you and saying like, oh yeah, like I really wanted to do something like that too. Yeah. And then they see you doing it and it inspires them to go seek, improving their lives.
Exactly, man. Exactly. And yeah, I had seen guys get hair transplants in the past. I was like, fuck, that's pretty dope. Like,
yeah, they've gotten better at least. Yeah. It's not like it's just like a staple gun or something with hairs or something like that. Like,
No. And Turkey do it so well. Like, I got quoted close to $20,000 in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Turkey, it's like $3,500.
Mm.
So big difference there. And Turkey do it better as well.
Yeah, because like I said, like I've heard that Turkey's like the place to go.
Yeah.
For hair transplants.
It is, man.
Got a year off the steroids, and you've had that experience on Married at First Sight. You've had a successful boxing match. What are your plans for the future?
Yeah, for the future, bro. My future is pretty simple, and it sounds probably kind of dicky to say, but I'm just focused on money, man. I'm focused on wealth, because, you know, I've struggled a lot with that in the past. You know, I've done things that you know, being in the PT industry, it's okay money, but it's nothing special, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, I am in the fitness industry still to some regard, but I'm doing some stuff on the side that is to set me up for the future, essentially. So this year I'm just focused, man, super focused.
And you're going to perhaps use your platform to promote, I guess, your past with steroid use and try and deter people from going down the same route as you?
Yeah, in terms of like social presence and stuff, it's just, I wouldn't mind doing some more podcasts and just being transparent. I'm pretty transparent on my social medias and stuff and just being a person. Like a lot of the guys and girls that come off MAFS, their social medias turn into ads.
Mm.
They're just constantly advertising stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not actually a human.
Mm.
And I have no sponsors. I have no deals. The only deal I have is with my hair.
Mm.
And other than that, that's it, man. Mm. I have no intent of promoting shit because I don't want to become an ad.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on and sharing that with us today. Especially there was some tough stuff from your childhood and then going through that experience and coming out the other side with steroid use. I commend you for that, because it's not an easy thing just come on the other side of addiction and then kill it and start thriving in life. I guess I'll end with one last question. What's the best piece of advice that you've received?
Best piece of advice I've received, I don't know about received, but probably that only one that comes to my head because of what I've been through is just be unapologetically you. Mm. It's very cliche, but the cliche stuff is usually the best.
Mm.
Just be you, because there's going to be a lot of pressure and pushback if you are somewhat controversial.
Mm.
But if you know it's true to yourself, just be you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cheers to that, Daniel.
Legend.
Nice to meet you. Thank you, brother. Well, this has been the Last Drinks podcast. I'm Will Hitchens, and we'll see you in the next one.